Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday, November 28th edition of Byers & Company. State Senator Andy Menar will join us, Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports, and our gift of the day as we deck the town for this holiday season. Company starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning and welcome. We're back here on Hump Day, and you know you've accepted winter when the high, or the low, I should say, of 28 sounds good to you, right? Yes. Still 16 degrees outside?
Still 16 right now.
Oh, that just makes me hurt, right?
Yeah.
I hate winter. When I was a kid, I often wondered why people would go to Arizona and Florida, right?
Mm-hmm.
The older I get, I no longer question that move.
In fact,
I'm thinking, what am I waiting for?
I talk to my mom every weekend. Mm. She's like, yeah, 65, 68. I'm shut up.
We have a lot of listeners in the Arizona and Florida region. So good morning, and I hope you're enjoying your sunshine. It's 16 back home.
Yes.
Senator Andy Menar joins us. Senator, congratulations on your victory, and congratulations on being named as one of the co-chairs for the Education Success Committee. What does that mean exactly when you are asked to co-chair along with other people? What does that look like?
Well, I think up front, Brian, I would tell you thanks for the congratulations and thanks for having me on the show this morning. I would say that there's a lot of collaboration that has to happen. So we're going to create our own path here. We're starting to meet right away, actually, and it's a large, diverse group of individuals from around the state, which I think is exactly what it needs to be. There's actually, I would politely say, people on that group that don't typically always agree with each other, and I think that's a good thing to get opposing views in a room. So there's four co-chairs, and our task given to us by the governor-elect is to put forward a plan that could be a groundwork or a path forward on how we can do a couple of things. Number one, make sure that we stay on the path that we're on for equity in school funding. And number two, how do we transform higher education in Illinois, which I think is going to be, and not to show any bias here, but I think that's going to be our most challenging task is how do we make sure that we stop the out-migration of students from Illinois to other regional colleges and universities around us.
Okay, well, that's a dollars and cents issue, for parents. Let me ask you this, and I'm not getting into the nitpicking like, happens on Capital Facts about the makeup of the committee. I mean, you can only have so many people, and it's a pretty long list of folks. But the co-chairs, if I look at them, I mean, you seem like an obvious one to me because you've been, fighting for this for so long. But then you go right into the others. I don't know when I look at State Representative Chris Welsh, but when it's listed as chief sponsor of several pieces of historic legislation, including the law bringing cursive writing back to our schools, I mean, is that going to be educational reform?
Well, I can't imagine we're going to take up something like that, not to diminish the importance of it or what the sponsor was intending when it was passed. But Representative Welch's strength on the committee is higher education. There's been a working group of Democrats and Republicans that have been meeting to try to propose bipartisan issues and reforms to really address some of the, we have major problems with higher ed in the state. That's going to be his strength on the
transition
team.
I don't know him, and I'm not being critical. I'm just saying, that doesn't seem to be cutting edge to me. But then you go to Dr. Janice Jackson, who co-chairs the CEO of Chicago Public Schools. I mean, how many CEOs of Chicago Public Schools have gone either down to corruption or whatnot? And then you have the Illinois Education Association. It just seems like some of these choices seem like same old to me.
Well, if you look at the body of the group, and I would acknowledge that it's tough to take the ag group, which Decatur's well represented on, take the transition group with Michael Kerrigan, and ag is Ryan McCrady and Juan Luciano from ADM, and Julie Moore Wolf is on finance with me, so Decatur's well represented. But unlike those groups, this one spans a pretty broad specter of what a to-do list would look like. So I think that the transition team did a pretty good job of trying to get as many folks that oftentimes, as I said, have differing opinions in the same room so we can start to sort through some of the challenges we face.
Senator, I'll take you at your word on that. I'm just looking at the co-chairs, and you've got two politicians, the head of the union and the Chicago Public Schools leading this thing.
Well, if you look at the body, and I would say this, my approach, as you know, Brian, has always never been a top-down approach. The members of that committee are going to have as much say-so. The role of the co-chair, in my opinion, and I haven't been told otherwise, but how I'm going to approach this is everyone has a voice, even individuals and organizations that maybe don't feel like they have an ownership of a seat in the transition committee. All voices, all opinions are welcome, and we're going to hear everybody out because, again, we have any number of things that we have to lay groundwork for a fix to higher education in Illinois. It's not going to be easy. And in my opinion, again, how I operate is I'm going to presume that everybody has a valid point to make and everybody should be heard out.
Okay. What about student representation or parent representation?
Well, I'm a parent. I mean, I'm a parent of three and in an underfunded public school. So I check that box. And I think that obviously could be said of others that serve on the transition committee. Students, that's an interesting, I read that as well yesterday. I actually had a couple of calls to the office, and that's an interesting, valid point. And we're going to make sure that students, especially not to focus so much on higher education, but make sure that students have a voice in the transition. You know, our goal is to produce a report that obviously could then be turned into potential pieces of legislation. My hope is that it's bipartisan in nature. And obviously having students have their voices heard and noted and recognizing that port would be important.
Okay, so is the main focus going to be higher ed?
No, it is not. And I only focus on that just in what we're talking about this morning because obviously my focus has been K-12. But I think if you look at the kind of the silos of what we have to go through, we have pre-K funding. And that's very important, important to the governor-elect as well. And we have some changes that we could propose there to make sure that the money that we have is more effective in its use. Then we have K-12. We've done a bulk of that work. It took 4.5 years, but we still have a little more work to do. And then we have higher ed. So if you look at those three silos, I think any reasonable person would say the higher ed piece is going to be the most difficult just because the budget impasse had such a profound negative impact on higher education in the state. So we have a lot of fixing to do there.
All right. I would also suggest there's a lot of, well, this would be up to your committee to decide. I would expect that you would hear from folks like the IBEW, the Carpenters, you know, that what we have found here in Decatur and from every shop teacher and union guy we have talked to is this lack of a pipeline into mm-hmm. these careers, you know, and from everything we are learning for the last 25 years, no one in District 61 has been pushing kids towards these careers. I mean, we're talking about in a day and age where people have student debt, which is almost something you can't get out of. These are literally pipelines to unbelievable careers where you can raise a family and make good money. And education has shied away from this. I'm sure if you talk to Josh Sapp about their average age electrician here in Macon County and how many young people they have being put in that pipeline, why are we not spending more time K-12 and because some kids aren't just wired for college. That doesn't mean they can't be wired for success in life.
We're going to cover that, and you're absolutely right. And I would just point to what Richland is doing with many of the trades right now in Decatur, which is, I think, it is an incredible success story for Decatur because there's other communities that haven't figured out how to thread this needle yet. Richland, under the leadership of President Valdez and Courtney Carson and others, have really put together a good program. That $1.5 million grant that we got in the bipartisan budget this year is really paying dividends. I actually got a call from Reverend Carson the other night to give me an update on some of the graduates who were unemployed and were matched with skills, just like you described, Brian, and were given, were hired on the spot for jobs that pay really good salaries. And that's exactly what we ought to be doing. So we're going to cover that base. I agree with you. That is something that I think with a little bit of investment, and maybe I would describe it maybe as better investment, more focused investment, we can do what is already being, we can do more at Richland, and we can replicate what Richland has shown can be done in Decatur around the state. That in and of itself, if we accomplish that, that's going to help our economy in Illinois
more
so than anything else I think we can do, frankly.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, if you look at the program that Caterpillar's doing with District 61, where they're paying kids, you know, basically interns learning how to weld during the summer. Everybody needs welders. Everybody needs truck drivers. Everybody needs electricians. These are jobs that are not going away. ADM's got trucks sitting in bays because they can't hire. These are $65,000 a year jobs. You go home at night every night at 5 o'clock. They're not on the road. Yeah. They're all Midwest Inland Port. Yet we can't, I mean, what we have to get, I think, Senator, and maybe my question about the student representation on this committee is that we're not getting kids at the age of 13 or 14 that might be potential dropouts, that might be potential gang members or drug dealers. We're shooting the bar too high. We're telling you, you got to go get a four-year degree. You got to go get a couple hundred thousand dollars in debt. You got to shoot for the moon. If you get these kids excited about these careers, you know, early, it's not just by the time they get to Richland Community College. The one thing we learned with this ag program was people told us we couldn't do it. And if you look at our incoming freshman class this year, we had 201 enrollees. They were majority female and majority African-American and Hispanic. But you got to show these kids that it's out there. It can't just be at a junior college level or at a state level. You got to start when they're young, getting excited about these programs.
Yeah, I agree. And you hit the nail on the head on another point. What I hope, and one of the conversations I want to try to steer our transition committee into is making a seamless transition from what I think we think of as blocks of education, whether that's middle school, then high school, and then maybe community college, and then maybe a four-year, and then maybe a master's degree for someone who does research at Tate & Lyle or ADM. We have to have some type of a seamless system that would be more efficient, that can deliver investment in a more efficient and effective way, and then most of all, serve students better and serve employers better. And that's a lofty conversation, but you know me, I'm not going to shy away from those lofty conversations. And that's going to mean that some of the traditional barriers that we see in the education community, especially in higher education, we're going to have to break those barriers down, because it has to be a seamless transition, especially for employment. We don't have that today, and I hope to steer the transition committee, that's one path of many, down that path, so we can make a proposal that may be somewhat controversial, but will force the conversation, because that will help employers, and most of all, that will help students become employees and gainfully employed.
Yeah, and what you have to do is do it, well, as far as the engagement of students, you've got to go to where they are. I mean, and if you ever want to find out how we did it, I mean, I'll be happy to share it with you, but it's not through pamphlets and brochures and the way...
Right, in a seminar, a once-a-year seminar. Right?
Yeah.
Didn't work.
I'm excited for you. I'm excited that you're in this spot, because I know you're passionate about it. We may not always agree on every issue, but I think that we all would want Democrats, Republicans, people who consider themselves neither one, we want kids to have a good career, because if they have a good career, they're spending money, they're raising families, they're adding to the tax base, they're helping a community grow. We want our companies to have the employees that they need so that they don't leave and go elsewhere. This ought to be an area where everyone can agree.
I agree, and I think that's what the goal, that ought to be a goal of the transition committee, is to produce, again, a framework that could then be turned into policy change, whether that's through legislation or maybe through just the incoming governor directing agencies to do things in a different way so they deliver a better product for employers in the state when it comes to education, when it comes to people who want to be employed. You know, one thing that I found in Decatur that led me to and this didn't surprise me. What surprised me is the number of times that it was said to me when we fought for that $1.5 million grant for Richland, with no strings attached, by the way. So no bureaucratic strings. My opinion was, let's give it to Richland. Let's see what they can do working with employers and trade unions in Decatur to get this done. The number of people that came up to me and said, I want a job, but I can't find one that I'm qualified for. And that doesn't mean you have to be a research engineer. That's not what they're talking about, of course. They're talking about, I want to drive a truck, or I want to become a welder, or I want to become an electrician. And there's all kinds of jobs open. And threading that needle, I think, is a success story right now for Decatur that I hope in this transition committee I can use as an example of how this can be done elsewhere in the state. So that is a big, that's a big challenge for us. It shouldn't be as big as it is.
No, it shouldn't.
It's a big one. All right. It's a big one, and we're going
to
do it.
Talk to Dr. Bart Jennings at Western Illinois University. Do me that favor. This guy runs the supply chain management program up there. I mean, you talk about a real-world degree. Their average kids coming in as seniors have two already outstanding job offers from places like ADM. And I mean, we're going to be shipping, moving, transporting, and supply chain isn't going anywhere. It's not like you can argue about whether trucks will be automated or whatever. But in this, in the world we live in, we're always going to have to get stuff and move stuff and get stuff elsewhere. That is a program that is putting people on the path. There was an intern for that program working for ADM, saved ADM $1 million a year in cost as an intern. You think that kid's got a job? Yeah, he does. But we should be duplicating that, or at least, you know, helping it. And then I think Senator Rose has an interesting thought on, you know, as far as the state schools are concerned, why is everyone trying to be everything?
That's a good point. And Senator Rose and Chaker and I have talked about this many times, both in public and in private. And when I referenced the higher ed working group from Senator Welch, Senator Rose serves on that kind of informal group, and they have some good ideas. Now that of course brings on controversy, because everybody likes their lane and everybody likes their turf and their silo. But I would propose to you this morning, I don't think I've ever said this publicly, but we can't afford that anymore. We have to be better, smarter, more efficient, and more effective in higher education. And to Senator Rose's point and the point that's been made by many others, it's time to have that conversation. And that's a conversation that I hope that we have on this process that we've laid forward with the transition.
All right, Senator Menard, we appreciate it. And keep us posted. Anything we can do to help, we are here ready to serve.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Senator Andy Menard, part of the education transition team for Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker. Not trying to be rude, but when I look at the co-chairs, my only point was you've got two politicians, the CEO of Chicago Public Schools and the president of the Illinois Education Association. That doesn't sound like a recipe for change.
Going by the track record of the state, no, not really.
No, I'm saying if you want bold and new, I mean, you go to the CEO of the worst school system in the entire state, and this has nothing to do with her, but her predecessors, look at the list.
Mm-hmm.
And the head of the union, and two politicians. That doesn't scream, we're going to change anything.
Right.
That's all.
I get you.
I mean, if you want to be bold and different, I mean, this is just cookie cutter. I mean, this is how
don't,
you...
Then don't do the status quo.
Don't get the head of the union, the head of Chicago schools, and two
different
politicians. I mean, I believe Andy's passionate about this.
Absolutely.
I really do. But there's a lot of... I have found just... My two cents on this, and I've spent a lot of time over the last couple of years involved in this, that change in education rarely comes from within. It's generally not something that is initiated and really inside of education.
No, it is people on
the outside forces pushing.
Right.
I mean, not to put a negative on anything, I'm just saying... Why did it take 30, 40 years, 50 years to create an Ag Academy, an FFA program, an agribusiness, you know, in District 61 with 9,000 kids and all of our major employers in this industry? You know.
Good question.
It is. And I think the problem is that you've had people in education that really don't have... And I'm talking administratively, leaders, people that come in, people that don't have any, I mean, they don't understand agribusiness any more than the kids do.
Right. You looked at it for a long time before you, oh, I mean, you know.
12 years.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't know. I mean, you know. So, we'll see. I'm wishing them the best of luck. And I mean it when I say we're here to help, because I think the end goal is what... And the higher ed thing, I, with all due respect, I love the University of Illinois. We've had a great relationship with Western Illinois University, love Millikan. But if you want to start with a place where you can find cuts, I mean, college campuses do not run in a real world way. I mean, there is not a business on earth that could run its business the way college campuses run theirs.
No.
I mean, you look at what wouldn't these tenured professors that teach one class a week.
It wouldn't survive.
So I know there have been cuts, and I know that people have. I'm sorry that it falls way down on my list of things I feel sorry about or bad about. It's like, well, I don't know. Maybe that full-time tenured professor making a couple hundred grand can teach more than one class a week.
It's an idea.
Or maybe that football coach that you screwed up and had to pay to. You're just not going to get my sympathy. And if you want kids to quit moving out of state to go to colleges, you got to make it more affordable for them to go here, which means that guy's got to teach more than one class a week.
Yes.
Sorry. My little rant.
You ready for the weather?
I am. Here's Jeff Daly with your WSOY 3-day forecast.
Because it's going to be 28 tonight as opposed to 16. Increasing clouds today. Some sunshine out there now, though. 31 your afternoon high. Clouds 28 tonight. Cloudy skies 43 tomorrow. And a cloudy day on Friday to start the weekend with a high of 47. Still 16 currently at the studios in downtown Decatur. Your WSOY time, 7:26.
Bring your Christmas cheer to the Decatur Christmas Parade on Saturday, December 1st at 5:30 p.m. This downtown Decatur holiday staple will be filled with fun floats, lit up with festival lights, great music, local celebrities, delicious candy, plus Santa himself. All proceeds benefit Decatur Earth Mover Credit Union's Charity of the Year, Macon County CASA. Can't make the parade? Tune in to WSOY 1340 AM or 103.3 FM as Brian Byers and Aaron.